Hi, everybody. My name is Matthew. I have alcoholism. I gave it the mic. Hey, Dustin, welcome. Nice chatting with you at the break. Great job. Got a birthday coming up. We'll hear more. Let's hear it for Will's pitch for 10 minutes. It's one of the things I love about Alcoholics Anonymous is we have one currency, right? Like, everybody in this room is equally valuable because there's only one currency, right? It's our experience. And sometimes the guy, my sobriety date's May 16th, 1993, right? So I have 31 years of sobriety. But I've been in meetings where when I talk, the guy with 10 days, all he hears is womp, 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 right? But the guy with 11 days has something to say to him. And I just love that about this. And another thing about AA that I love is, you know, people come in here and they get all weird about the God thing. And, you know, this is a spiritual program. And all that means is it's not a material program. That's all that means. And one of the ways I've realized over the years that this is such a spiritual program is when material world, like I have kids, you know, and one of the things I know about kids is they're expensive, right? They cost a lot of money. And they're even now that they're older, they cost money. And my son, a few years ago, he asked me for $5,000 to help him buy a car. And of course, I gave him $5,000. Right? But I had $5,000 less. That's how the material world works, right? But Will just got up here and he tried to say something in 10 minutes. And he gave you his currency. And now he has more. That's just the spirit, the difference between spiritual and material. So I will stop lecturing on my concepts now and tell you about what it was like for me. And how many people are in your first year of sobriety? Wow, a lot. Wow. Lots of people. Right on, right on. Well, I'm surprised. Can you give me my water? I'm surprised by that, and I'm excited by that because I got to have dinner with Mark before the meeting, and when I got here, this place was alive with recovery. Everybody's looking in the eye and saying their name. And if all of you people are new in this group, you got really lucky. That's what AA is supposed to feel like. It says in the 12 and 12, the theme of the 12th step is the joy of living. You know, that's what this is like. And I would not experiencing that. But for all of you in your first year, I want to talk about alcoholism for a few minutes. And when I got sober May 16th, 1993, I could tell you a whole bunch of stuff that happened building up to that, right? I was a good kid like Will. I went to college. I got 2 degrees. I came from a family of alcoholics. My parents weren't, but my brothers were. My grandfather died of alcoholism after Bill Wilson tried to get him to quit drinking. My uncles all died of alcoholism. But when I got to college, I did well in school, but I drank and used all through school, and I went on the road with a band and couple of bands. I'd made some records. I toured around, and I drank myself out of that career, right? And there's a bunch of stories I could tell you about that, but I want to talk about alcoholism, you know? And sometimes I could come up here for all of you in your first year and say, you know, when I got sober, I had tens of thousands of dollars of debt. I was wanted by the police, you know? I had warrants out for my arrest. I'd ruined all my relationships, and that's not alcoholism. I used to think it was. Those are my circumstances as a result of alcoholism. But I've seen people get in those circumstances as a result of pure selfishness. You don't need to have alcoholism to do that. But what alcoholism looked like for me, for Dustin and all the rest of you, Zach, and the guys who identified in your first 30 days is, you know, I had this apartment by the beach, in Redondo Beach. I hadn't paid rent on it, so I was gonna get evicted. But, you know, April of 1993, I would wake up in that apartment, and I'm just going to give you a kind of example of a day. I don't know if all these things happen in one day, but I know they happened over this time. I would wake up, and I know that almost every day I would wake up if I slept the night before, and I would think and say out loud, don't drink today. Like, right when I open my eyes, don't drink today. You know, and there were lots of reasons I shouldn't drink that I blew right past. Like when I got thrown out of my last musical situation, I was pretty good. I should have stopped drinking, and I told myself to stop drinking. That was years before this. When my mother got diagnosed with terminal cancer, I should have stopped. I wanted to stop. I wanted to show up for her. She lived a couple miles from this apartment. I didn't, you know. I got this teenage girl. She was 18, but I was 31. I got her pregnant, and I told myself, you got to stop drinking. And this is 8 months later that I'm waking up in April, and So I don't want to, I'm not saying stop drinking anymore for any more noble reasons. I'm saying stop drinking because I'm sick all the time. I can't keep food down. I don't feel good, but I keep drinking. And so I'd say don't, you know, whatever you do, Matthew, don't drink today. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing we do, right? Like whenever I drive by a homeless person and they're talking to themselves, I'm like, I got you, man. I understand. Because I'd be saying don't drink out loud. And I think that's a good idea. Do what that guy says. And it's me. And I'm like, don't drink today. And I don't want to drink. And I get up and I'm walking down the hall and I've decided I'm not going to drink. And I think that's alcoholism too, right? I believed myself. I said it yesterday. But I said, oh, okay, we're not drinking. That's good. We. It's just me. Yeah, you guys starting to relate to this? Yeah. And I'm walking down the hall and in this particular apartment, it's a big apartment, there was a bathroom right by that my room. So maybe I went in there that day, I'm not drinking, and I get in the shower, and you know, does anybody remember this, where you feel like you're the worst person on earth, and you feel terrible, and then you feel like 8% better, right? Like the hot water's hitting my face, and I've got shampoo in my hair, I'm like, wait a minute, you know, I feel pretty good, right? So now I'm not drinking, and I'm clean, right? I'm like on my way to humanness, and I've been awake for 20 minutes. And then I might think something good. And a lot of times what I thought back then is go see mom, right? I really loved my mother. I didn't ever have problems. We didn't fight. She was responsible for me becoming a musician because she was alert and saw that I needed something from my awkward self and bought me a guitar right at the right time in my life. And so I'm in the shower now. I'm not drinking. I'm clean a little bit. I'm feeling 8% better. And now I'm going to go see my mom. So now I'm a good person. And I've been awake for 20 minutes, right? And then I step out of that shower. That shower had a bath, so you kind of step over it. And there's a big, we had this big, or we, it was just me. And I used to talk to me a lot. I was like Gollum, you know, like, oh, my precious. You know, that was me in that apartment for months. And I put my feet on that bath mat. And there's a thing in the book, or in the prayer, I love this prayer, and it says, relieve me of the bondage of self. And I didn't know what that was called at the time, but, you know, when my feet hit that bath mat, I've noticed over the years that one of the symptoms of the bondage of self is fear. Like, if I'm in fear, I know I'm in the bondage of self. If I'm in blame, I know I'm in the bondage of self. But back then, I don't know any of this. I just put my feet on the bath mat and think, wait a minute, what do mom and dad know? And what do they not know? Because I'm going over there today, but I don't know if they know there's a girl that's pregnant. I don't know if they know I'm not working right now. I don't know if they know that I'm kind of sick all the time. And the weird thing is, if you had held a gun to my head right then and said, when was the last time you visited your mother? I would have said 3 weeks ago. Because in my head, that's what I did, right? If you had done it by the time everybody else was on, I hadn't seen her for 6.5 months. And I apparently called her every week and said I was coming over. So I was slowly torturing my dying mother. And I didn't even know it. But I'm standing on that bath mat now, and I don't know if they know all the trouble I'm in. And I assume they don't, because I lied all the time. But then I walk up to that mirror and I wipe off that mist and I'm starting to shave. And back then, if I shaved, if I bothered to shave, I didn't look at myself because I looked bad. I just looked in my eyes. And looking in my eyes, I'm looking at that other guy that I live with. And the thought is, hey man, you're not drinking. You should go next door and just get 2 beers because that's not drinking. And then I'll settle down a little bit. And I can be a good guy and go see my mom. Because the thought process for me back then was, you know, I can, if I get a little loose, I can go over there and shuck and jive a little, ask them a few questions, feel them out, see what they know, what they don't know, and get by, right? I used to be good at that. By the time I was standing on that bath mat, I wasn't good at that for a long time. And then I go next door, right? I live right next door to a liquor store. I got enough money to get 2 beers. I'm not drinking, so the 2 beers is harmless. And I walk up, you know, and beers are suddenly really small. Like, they just look small. Coors, I used to drink Coors, which is really sad. But I would look at that. I mean, I feel bad for that guy. But I'd see these Coors, and I'm like, God, they're so skinny now. Like, when did that happen, right? And right above them is two Fosters. And that's two beers, right? That Australians understand. So it's an Australian tire in honor of Foster. And I get those beers, and I walk over. Mr. BJ, the guy who owned the liquor store, is so funny. He'd look over his glasses at me, and he'd go, Matthew, you have a problem. And your problem is trying to convince you that you don't have a problem. And I would say, because I don't know what he was talking about, I'd go, are you the Riddler? What the hell, man? I don't want to buy this. And I'm looking over his shoulder while he's doing his little riddle, and there's gin. I could relate. You know, there's gin. There's a size of gin that I could pay for that was the same as these two beers. But I'm not drinking. But I'll buy that gin, and I'll go home and just take a little whack off it, get changed, go see my mom. So I go next door, I sit down on this couch, and I just take a little hit off that gin, and all of you know what happens. I just want a little more. And then I want a little more, and pretty soon I'm kind of hurrying up because I'm trying to forget that I'm supposed to be at my mom's house right now. And I probably called her before I went to the liquor store. I do remember one time when I called her, because I remember what she said, and it hurt me. I said, I'm going to come see you. And she just was real quiet, and she goes, well, that would be lovely. I didn't know I called like 3 days ago. I didn't know I called for months. But she didn't have the energy to fight cancer and fight with me. And I just, so that's what alcoholism is. I did not want to drink. I have no desire to drink. I really didn't want to. I didn't feel good when I did it. My body shut down. I threw up. I had the runs. And I told myself not to do it. And I couldn't stop. And I'm a guy that could do anything. I got 2 degrees in college. I toured and made albums. I did everything I ever put my mind to. I could always pull it out at the last minute, whatever trouble I was in. And by the end of it, I got nothing left. And I can't stop drinking. So that's what I was like. What happened was, so that was April, let's say May 16th is the day I haven't had a drink since the night of May 15th. But May 8th, my brother called. Now, my brother was a raging alcoholic when I was a little kid. He's 6 years older than me. I was a surprise. I was a kind of a mistake. They didn't know. They didn't expect me. Everybody else a lot older than me. And my brother was 12 years sober at this time in the Trudger group at Lawndale. Nobody knew what was wrong with me. And he called and said, hey, tomorrow's Mother's Day. And I know you're having car trouble, which I just think is so Irish Catholic of my brother, right? It's just so funny. Like in my family, car trouble is if my car trouble, I had a key to a car. Like, there was a car somewhere on the planet that fit in. I hadn't seen it in a really long time. And we call that car trouble. Like, we don't like to hurt anybody's feelings, you know. And my brother, and what he said was, it's Mother's Day tomorrow. It's probably Mom's last Mother's Day. And I just want to make sure you're there. And I got off the phone and I was mad at him. What does he mean, make sure I'm there? Like, I'm mad already, right? That's alcoholism. I'm indignant at a normal person for calling me on my BS in the most subtle way he could think of doing it. In the most kind way he could be to me, I'm already mad. So I want to hurry this up. I got off the phone and thought, I'm going to blow her mind. I'm going to get flowers. I'm going to take a shower tomorrow. I'm going to do my laundry. I'm going to write a card. And instead, I sat on the couch all night and got drunk, and I went down there and I ruined Mother's Day. I don't know what I did. I just know what they looked like when I was looking at them. I've been up all night drinking. And my brother picked me up, and when I got in his car, he looked at me, and he kind of leaned back, and I didn't know why. And I found out a few days later that at that time I weighed 108 pounds, and I'm 5'10". I was 5'10" at my prime. I'm 5'9½" now, according to my doctor. Whatever. But I was skinny, you know, and we went down, and I ruined Mother's Day, and I don't know what happened. All I can tell you is I asked my sister on my 20th AA birthday 11 years ago. My sister's my best friend in the world, and she's 11 years older than me. And I said, what happened on Mother's Day? Because she called to wish me a happy sobriety day. And she goes, oh no, we'll never talk about that. And I never meant to be that guy. I never meant to be that guy. She said, you were vile to our dear mother. And I don't understand how I could be like that, because I had nothing but love and respect for her. Nothing. But I was completely inappropriate and disgusting. And my brother rescued me. He looked at me. I don't know, again, I don't know what was happening. I just remember how they were all looking at me. And everybody had flown in. It's Mom's last Mother's Day, and I ruined it. And my brother drove me home, and on the way home, we got in a fight, an argument. Anybody else Irish Catholic? Anyone? Yeah. See, you know, we fight, and it's no biggie, right? Like, I always say it's like swans on a lake. I say, okay, I'll see you at Christmas. Say hi to Mom. Like, we don't care. We fight all the time. Like, but it's nobody ever cares about it. But this one I cared about. And I want to talk about something that Will touched on, and he probably doesn't even realize he talked about it. I want to talk about grace tonight. Because a lot of you are new, and it takes a little while to thaw out and open up to the spiritual, not the material. But we can all agree there's some grace running through this room. We all know that already, right? Because you're here, right? I bet you 20% of you did not want to come here tonight. That's just the average of every AA meeting, right? But maybe you committed to somebody and they picked you up. Or maybe you committed to pick somebody up, but then you didn't want to come. But you're here, like, that's grace. You don't even know how you got here. You know, Dustin's here. We talked to the middle. He's here. That's grace. But I didn't know I was about to set the wheels in motion with my brother when he drove away, and I decided to pursue the argument. I decided to fight with him. And I waited till he got home, and I screamed at him, called him up and screamed at him. And again, I'd love to know what I was so upset about. I'm a drunk who just ruined my mom's last Mother's Day, and I got the moral higher ground in this fight. And on the other end of the phone, he said nothing. 12 years sober, just listened. And when I was done, he really quietly said, "Matthew, I think you have a problem with alcoholism." And I said, "Of course I do." And that was the first time I'd ever said anything like that. And I think that was grace, because I didn't expect to say that. I didn't know that was going to come out of my mouth. But the steps say we admitted we were powerless. We admitted. I admitted. And he said the funniest thing. He goes, "Don't go anywhere." And I go, "Oh, okay." I haven't gone anywhere for 7 months. I go see the Riddler every other day. But that's kind of my social circle, you know. Just me and Gollum here on the couch. And he raced to my house, and I love him for that. And I want to talk about recovery, so I'm just going to say my brother artfully 12-stepped me. My brother did not come in my living room, pick me up, and say, "You're a bastard that ruined Mother's Day." My brother didn't thump me on the chest and call me stupid. And I've heard a lot of AA. I've been around AA. I've been to 10 countries in all 50 states for Alcoholics Anonymous. And occasionally I hear my sponsor thump me on the chest and call me stupid. And I got news for you. If your sponsor's doing that, get another sponsor. That is not Alcoholics Anonymous. It's very clear in that book that that is ineffective. Bill knew that. Bob knew that. We never talked down to another alcoholic. There were years of experience in that sentence. Love and tolerance of others is our code, because that's what works. And my brother had a lot of time, a lot of years of thumping me on the chest and calling me stupid when we were growing up. But he saw me as a dying alcoholic. He took me down to the beach and he started telling me how he felt when my mom and dad kicked him out of our house when he was 18. I was 11. And I was intrigued. I thought he was going to yell at me. I thought he was going to tell me to get my act together. I thought he was going to tell me I hurt our mother. He did not do any of that. He said, "You know what I felt like the day I got kicked out?" And I was so shocked because we never spoke of that. It was a dark day. I'm 11 years old. I'm going, what'd you feel like? You know, I remember that when I was. And he starts telling me how I felt, and I'm leaning in. And then he says, "What's your plan?" And I'm thinking, God, he doesn't know I owe tens of thousands of dollars to people. And then he told me how he felt when his wife and son kicked him out of their house. And I remember that day, I was 14. He called me. He had no one left to call. My cool brother. My brother was extremely handsome. He played the drums. He looked like Paul McCartney. And he was a really smart businessman. But he was an alcoholic. And he called me from a payphone. And he told me how he felt that day. And I remember that day. And he said, "But what's your plan?" And I thought, he doesn't know that I pushed that pregnant girl down a flight of stairs last night. He had no idea that I did that. And I didn't know what was happening then, but I was working the second half of the first step. And he was 12-stepping me exactly like it says to do in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, tell them a little bit of your own story and win their confidence. Do not talk down to them. And then he told me I felt when he lived in his car, and that was a dark time for me because I loved my brother. I worshipped my brother. When I was 17, 18, I was playing in a good band. The school used to let me rehearse my band in the music room, so I'd borrow my dad's car early in the morning to get my Stratocaster and my Fender Twin down to the school, and I'd just drive around and try to find his car. And I threw up my hands and said, you know what, man, I got to go to AA, because I wanted to be like him. He was sitting there clear-eyed, telling the truth, loving my mom, showing up for stuff. And I said, I'm going to go to AA. And my brother just burst out laughing. Like, we were having a very serious conversation. And he just started laughing. And it broke the spell. And I go, what? What's so funny? He goes, dude, you're not going to AA. And I said, I'm not. He goes, no, you're going to a hospital. And I go, I can't do that. I'm really busy. Anybody else remember that? I'm like, hospital, let's not get crazy, right? And then I go, well, how long? And he goes, 30 days. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Now, the night before I pushed that girl down a flight of stairs, I had a gun in my mouth. But let's not rush into hospitalization. You know, like, what is wrong with us? Like, let's just wait till it gets a little worse, a tick farther down the scale, right? And I want to be clear. I didn't violently throw someone down the stairs. I cared for her. I didn't love her. And I had no relationship to that baby. I felt nothing. I kept trying to. But I was in the bondage of self. And she came over that day and said, we got to go to the doctor. Try not to drink today. And I was drunk. I'd been drinking all night. And what I felt like she was doing is yelling at me that I'm a bum. And I just took her little wrists and I pushed her. And I started to slam the door. And I realized I pushed her too hard. And I slammed the door faster because I didn't want that responsibility. And I heard her go down those stairs. And one of the reasons I take pains to tell that story, I don't like telling that story. I'm not proud of that. But there's people in this room right now who are coming to this cool meeting and part of this love and all of this happiness around here. And they got a little thing in their head and they're going, well, AA's good. I'm not drinking for 20 days or 28 or 30 days. And I'm, you know, and these guys are cool, but they don't really know how bad I am. They don't know how dirty I am. This works for people, but I'm not a people. I'm an animal. And I'm here to tell you, whatever you think, however much you compromised your moral compass, however dirty you feel like you are inside, has no effect on how beautiful your recovery can be. None. I've been all over the place. I've sponsored dozens of people, over 100 people. I've heard it all. There is redemption here. And that's a spiritual thing. It's not a material thing. We can't buy our way into it. You can't fake character. You got to walk into it. So I did these things, and my brother says I need to go to a hospital, and I'm a little not sold on a hospital. But he just took it as a yes, right? And we walked up to my apartment, and he said, I'm going to come. I got to figure out how to do this. I got to talk to mom and dad. And he called me on May 15th. So I'm going to pick you up tomorrow. And I'd love to tell you I got ready for rehab. You know, I did my laundry. I packed a little bag. I got showered. I cut my hair. You know, going to rehab, you know. No, I got as drunk as I possibly could. I sold my last guitar, and I passed out on the floor. I was laying on the floor May 16th, and the phone rang. So I picked it up. So he's coming over. And it was a woman who said, your daughter was born. You need to come to the hospital. And I'm just going to hurry this up. I went to the wrong hospital. I found my car, so there's a little grace, right? I found my car, and I had the key, and I was looking around like a cat, like, here, car, 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 you know, and I found the car. I'd been wearing the same clothes for 3 days. I jump in the car, and I floor it to the hospital where I was born, because alcoholics are selfish and self-centered, and that's where babies come from, you know, clearly, right? And I'm like, okay, I'm okay, okay. And I get to the hospital, I go in, and the lady's like, we don't know who you're talking about, and I'm yelling at her, look again, like she's like, they're gonna appear, you know, and she's like, they're not here. And I walked out of there, and I thought, you know, you should just go kill yourself, you're a loser. It was like, there was this vase I saw at the Getty Museum like 6 months ago. I was at the Getty Museum with my children, and this vase was like this big, and it's thin glass. it was made before Christ was born. And I looked at that vase thinking that would last in my house for like 5 minutes, you know. And here it is, like 2,500 years old. And that day when I left that hospital, it was like I took that vase and I smashed it in the concrete of that parking lot where my car was. And I looked at all those pieces glittering up in the sun, and I thought, I can't fix this. I can't put this back together. My precious life, all my talent, all of my advantages, all of the love my parents gave me, all of the character, I got rid of it. It's gone. It's in pieces. I can't. I'm not going to be a dad. That's not going to happen. I'm a terrible son. And I decided to go kill myself. And I got in the car, and I leaned my head against the steering wheel, and I started the car, and my head bounced off the steering wheel because the car kind of bucked and backfired. And the name of the right hospital came into my head, and that is grace. And I know it's grace. Will had grace. Did you have Will and grace? I just did that. Will happened to be on a job the day he decided to get sober, and he gave a BS excuse to a woman who had worked as a drug and alcohol counselor. Did y'all catch that? What are the chances? That's grace. He couldn't make that happen. And I know it's grace that I thought of the name of the right hospital because I practice meditation. It's one of the steps of AA, and I've been doing it every day for 20 minutes a day, often twice a day for over 22 years. And if you try to practice meditation 3 days in a row, the first thing you learn is you're not in charge of the thoughts that come into your head. You go, you know, remember that girl in high school? Yeah, you know, screw her, you know, whatever. Like, you know, like I'm for 61 and I get mad about the prom again. Like stuff, that's how your head is. Like, boom, boom, boom. And, you know, that's what meditation is you learn that that's happening and you come back to peace. It's practicing that muscle, right? But we're not in charge of the thoughts that come into our head. And I wasn't trying to think of the name of the right hospital. I had an involuntary electrical impulse, and I got a little grace, and I went to the hospital. And I ran up there, and I went into that room, and I ran into that room, and Anna was in there. You know, she just had this baby, this woman that I don't love. And she didn't look good. You ever seen a woman who's just had a baby? Yeah, it's not bad. No offense, it's just a fact. I'm speaking in AA. I'm not running for president. I'm going to tell you the truth. It was awful. Yeah, she looked bad. And she's coming at me like the Elephant Man, you know, and I'm standing there. And as she's getting closer and closer, I'm thinking, there's something really beautiful about her right now. And it's not her physical self. And it shamed me. And then she handed me Phoebe Rose, and Phoebe was so perfect. And I really thought I was going to throw up. And I didn't know then what I know now. I was in the bondage of self. When I'm in the bondage of self, I paint everything with my ugliness so I can walk across a room. I'm a liar. You must be a liar. I'm a cheat. You cheat. I steal. You steal. And my paint would not stick on these authentic women. There was no place for my moves. And I felt worse than I've ever felt in my whole life. When I met my daughter, it was the worst moment I've ever had. And I decided, no problem. I got a gun at home, so I'm going to be over in 20 minutes. And I handed that baby back to Anna, and I lied. I said, everything's going to be all right. And I ran down those stairs, and I prayed, God, make it so those two women never see me again, because I'm going to hurt them. And I raced to my house, and I ran up the stairs, and my brother was standing on my porch. Grace. Grace. It's all around. It's all over you right now. I can see it. It's all over this room. It was outside with the smokers. It was inside with the little children, with Charlotte. The thing I learned about grace being in AA is I used to think it was like an Amazon package. You know, I do something nice, a little grace comes in the mail, right? What I found out is we're actually just swimming in it all the time, but I'm not connected to it all the time because I'm in the bondage of self. So I'm going to hurry some things up. I went off to rehab. I came back with 30 days. I wanted to go to the beach. I wanted to get my head clear. My brother said, go to a meeting. I ran up to that apartment, and there was a party in my apartment, which was weird because I lived there by myself. And I didn't know anybody at the party. But some people had found out I was out of town, and they broke into my house. and somebody handed me a beer, and I turned around and I ran away from my apartment. And if you're new, if you're in your first year, I want to tell you honestly why I did that. I did that because I had one thing. I had nothing, no character, self-respect. I had no prospects to ever get back on my feet financially. I was terrified of being a father because Phoebe was so beautiful and fragile, and I was like an elephant. But I had 30 days. And I think Dustin has 16. And I hope those are the most precious things you got. If you're in here counting days, if I had to say in that moment, what can you write your name under and say, this belongs to me? What do you not owe on? And the only thing I had was 30 days. That's all I had. And I liked them. And I left that apartment because I didn't want to lose the one thing I had. And I called AA. This is a true story. I called AA from a phone booth 2 blocks from my apartment. I told the guy everything. I was scared to death. And he said, where are you? And I told him the corner I was on. He said, there's a meeting right across the street. Great. I couldn't make that happen. It's like Will's story. How could I know that when I found a phone booth, it was going to be right across the street from an established speaker meeting in Redondo Beach? So I've had a lot of that stuff happen. I ended up having to move back in with my mom and dad that night because I couldn't go home. My mom's dying of cancer. My dad and mom were married for 45 years. They loved each other. I didn't want to move in there. It was going to be ugly for them. It's bad for them. I'm a loser. You know, they were really beautiful people. I didn't want to move in there. But the guy who saw me at the meeting, he took me there. He knew my brother. And when I went in there, it was perfect. I didn't know it was perfect. They opened the door and they were so happy to see me. And in my vision, I'm a loser. I got an illegitimate child. I don't want to darken their door with my problems. They've been married for 45 years. They love each other. My mom's sick. This is not going to be good. But the truth was, they were married for 45 years. They loved each other. And they laid awake at night going, what's happened to our boy? Is he going to be okay? Because we may not see this through. And I showed up on their porch. They were like, please come in. And I'm here to tell you, like, we have a lot of misconceptions around here. And one of the things we think about around here is perfect means comfortable. Perfect means chill. Perfect means all my ducks are in a row. No. Sometimes perfect is really uncomfortable. You know, like, why would anybody work a step if everything was perfect? When you get uncomfortable, your sponsor goes, I'm not surprised you're uncomfortable. You still haven't done your 4-step, right? I fell in love with a woman, like hard love with this woman. Our first date, it was really uncomfortable because I was like, try not to show how much you like her. You know, it's coming out of me. I didn't know my wife was hungover at the time. She goes, you were so animated. And I was so like wanting the date to end, right? It was uncomfortable. I've been madly in love with the same woman for 29 years. It was perfect. Living with my mom and dad was uncomfortable. It was perfect. Part of the discomfort is I woke up in the morning and thought, I got to get out of here. I'm freaking out. So I went to an early morning meeting. My dad said, if you're going to a meeting, take the car. I went to the meeting. It was uncomfortable, perfectly uncomfortable. And I left that meeting and thought, I don't like those meetings. I'll go home to mom and dad. I went to mom and dad. They were all nice and forgiving and stuff. That made me nervous. I said, there's a noon meeting. I'm going to go. I just went from one uncomfortable place to another one 3 times a day for a year. I did. And you know, the second step says we came to believe. We came to believe. It doesn't say someone shoved the chapter We Agnostics down our throat. It says we came to believe that there was a power that could restore us. And I remember that. I remember I woke up one day, like 3 months into this 3 meetings a day stuff, and my dad's making breakfast. That's a bad idea, my dad making breakfast. He never did that. My mom did that. So I went down the hall and I said, Dad, can I help you do this? And he needed my help. It was a mess. And I'm scooping eggs off the counter. I'm putting the bacon in the right pan. And he's just kind of shaking and he looks at me and he says, do you know how much I love your mother? He just wanted to talk to his son. And this guy, he fought in the Battle of the Bulge when he was 19 years old in Germany, in World War II, in Europe. And he's telling me the intimacy of a 45-year marriage. And I saw it. I said, God, this is a beautiful man. He's right in front of me. I had enough relief from the bondage of self to see the grace. And I looked at my watch, it was 6:45, and I like going to the 7 a.m. meeting. And to be honest about why I like going to the 7 a.m. meeting, it's because Carol went there. And Carol would speak inappropriately about her sex life. And that would get my attention. And I'm like, oh my God, it's almost Carol time. Dad, I gotta go. And I went to the meeting, and Carol did not disappoint. You know, it was stuff like, oh, I went to an orgy. Should I write thank you notes? It's like, God bless you, Carol. You know, be free, Carol, you know. And then I started seeing you guys laughing, and I started feeling like I like these people. I came to believe. I'm going to go just to, I get it, go a little long, right? A few minutes, okay. Because I want to talk about a fantastic thing, and I think Denise wants me to tell this story. I got a job. I turned down a really good job and went back to my lame job because my sponsor said, you can't take that job, it'll mess up your sobriety. So then one day, I remembered a guy's name who was visiting from out of town. He came back a month later. I remembered his name. I said, welcome back, Kevin. And he said, wow, you remembered my name. And he gave me a better job. And I think that's grace. I didn't hustle the guy for a job. I didn't know he was vice president of an international airline. I just welcomed him back, and he gave me a job. And I got this job at Qantas. And I was going to work one day, living with my parents and with my crappy car, and I stopped and I bought a guitar. I'm going to meetings all the time. I'm doing my job. I'm trying to help my dad take care of my mom. I'm keeping my head down. I'm paying child support. Just doing what's in front of me. It was uncomfortable. It was kind of miserable. We talked about our first year outside. And I got there to the airport, and I got my new beautiful guitar, Taylor Dan Curry single cutaway guitar, which is like a work of art. And I walk in there, and I realize nobody trusts me at work because I got hired by the vice president. I don't go out at night and drink with them, and I don't chase the women. Right? What have I got to offer a woman? Hey, I'm an AA. You know, I live with my parents. I got a baby, but listen to this. I am no chick magnet, right? I just did what I was supposed to do. And I had been the cool guy at work, and I always lost my job. So I'm like the totally nerdy guy. But I got this guitar, and I have no one to share it with. So I walked to the employee bus stop that night, and I'm holding this guitar in my hand. And I'm just thinking, I'm going to go home to my parents, and they don't like this music stuff. They think it was part of what corrupted me. Forget the fact that half my family has died of alcoholism. For some reason, Mick Jagger is responsible for my alcoholism. But so I realized I'm going to go home alone with this guitar. And there was a woman, poor woman, this woman from British Airways standing there. And I turn and go, hey, I bought this guitar on my way to work. Can I show it to you? She goes, I don't look at strange men's guitars. And I'm like, lady, I'm not hitting on you. Like, you wouldn't believe how much I'm not hitting on you. But I don't say that. I go, okay, I'm sorry. I made you uncomfortable. And we got on the bus, and I felt worse now. And I get on the bus, and by the time it comes around to the Tom Bradley terminal, it's packed. It's like 10:30 at night. All the employees are on it. And we're pushed together like this. And it's right here, and she's really uncomfortable. And she has a book in her hand called Surprised by Joy by C.S. Lewis. And I said, I've read that book. Because I wanted her to relax, and I read it. I have a degree in religious studies. And she goes, well, cut to the chase. Do you believe in God? And I almost spit on her. I was like, God saved my life, you know. And she, the poor woman, she goes, okay, like, you know. And she goes, I don't believe in God. And I go, oh, that's an interesting choice of literature, you know. And she said, well, I'm seeking, but I don't believe in God. And I go, well, tell me about the God you don't believe in. And we started talking. And the bus rides 20 minutes to the bus parking lot. And I'm just relaxing and looking at this woman, listening to this beautiful British accent. And I just feel this grace, like real grace. I don't feel like something I'm going to think about later. I'm like, God, I feel very calm. I feel very at home in this crowded bus listening to this woman talk about God. And all I remember from that conversation is I said, I don't know anybody that would believe in the God that you just described that you don't believe in. I believe in the God that beats my heart and grows my hair. I don't understand God, I just believe in God. And we got off the bus and I went back to my car and I realized this is the chance of a lifetime. Something just happened. And I ran back to her and I said, hey, you think maybe you'd like to have dinner sometime? And boy, did she not want to have dinner with me. She goes, all right, look at my guitar. I've read that book. But she just attacked me. And I go, hey. And I said, no is a complete sentence. And she goes, okay, no. And I'm not bold with women. I'm really not. And I said, well, I think we're missing something. And I went back to my car and I drove home to my mom and my dad and I put my guitar in the living room. I didn't want them to see it. And I told my dad that story. And he said, that's not over. It was so sweet. We were walking down the hall and his bedroom and my mom were here and I was at the end of the hall. And he put his hand between my shoulder blades and he said, son, that story's not over. And I go, Dad, you did not hear her. Like, it's fini, you know. And I woke up the next day, I went to work. And I thought about it, like, not at all, like, 235 times, like, hardly at all. But I saw her at British Airways, now I'm at Qantas, and I thought, I got to get to the early bus because I don't want to be humiliated again. And I ran to catch the 9:45 bus instead of the 10 o'clock bus, and she came up behind me and said, hey, you. I said, yeah, and she goes, I think I was rude to you. I said, that's okay. She said, I don't want to go out with you. I said, yeah, you've been really clear. I hear you, you know. And she goes, but if you want to miss this bus and go to Starbucks, I'll have a cup of coffee with you. And I'm really sensitive to caffeine. I'm like, sure. You know, yeah, midnight coffee, I'm in, right? And this truly happened. We sat there until they closed Starbucks and all the buses stopped running. And 2 weeks later, she proposed to me. We've been married for 29 years. That's grace. Yeah, I'm just a minute. So that's sweet, that little sign you got. I just want to say this. Pip and I, we just had, doesn't eat Alcoholics Anonymous. She drinks like a normal person. But we've had people in and out of our house our whole marriage. We had two children. I put her in my car. We went directly to the right hospital. And both times, Anna and Phoebe were waiting for us when our children were born. We raised them all together. And we did the AA thing. I made amends over and over to those children, my Anna and Phoebe. And I just want to finish with this, because a lot I didn't tell you, but Phoebe's 31 now, like I'm 31 years sober. And 2 years ago in March, she said, Dad, I want you and Pip to come up to Portland. My daughter's a nurse in Portland. She's a geriatric psych nurse, which I'm trying not to take personally. So we go up there, and she said, Dad, you need to stay at this hotel. And I go, okay. I got a room at that hotel. And she goes, I don't know. I might call you tonight. I might call you tomorrow. I go, okay, we're here. She called me the next day. And she said, Dad, it's time. And I took Pip, and we went to the right hospital. And I went upstairs, and I was standing there when Phoebe gave birth to my grandson, Emmett. And she handed him to me. The room is full of grace. The room is full of light. I was not in the bondage of self. I saw what it was all about. And I knew I had this little boy covered as long as I'm drawing breath. And Phoebe and I looked in each other's eyes and just started bawling our eyes out. I am not in charge of the banquet. I've been invited to the banquet. And so have you. And our only job is to be a good guest at the banquet. Thanks for letting me share.